You're listening to Packers Talk Network. Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave, and it's the Green Bay Packers at 2-0. Coming off of a doubling up of the Detroit Lions, 42-21. Dave, off to a pretty good start here. A little bit unexpected as far as I'm concerned.
Is it?
Do we know much about, we've
played Minnesota, and Minnesota might look like kind of a leaky team. We played Detroit, and Detroit,
it's Detroit.
Was very, and you know, as I went through the game, and you know, I'm starting to rewatch the games now to take notes, and there's, it's actually an interesting perspective when you watch it again, how would you describe the Packers? The Packers blank the Lions in this game. Like, how would you put in that blank?
Beat.
Okay. give me an adverb.
let me see. I would say they dominated the Lions.
I think so. I think so too, because, you know, like you said, they doubled up.
Yep.
And you know, the feeling is, you know, these bunch of players had really great games. I actually think the game was a lot closer and could have gone in a different direction if Detroit wouldn't have been Detroit. It was right around the right before and after the half. But up to that point, it was actually up to the halftime, other than a few things, it was actually a pretty close game. And I remember when I was watching it after a couple drives, I was getting that sort of flustered, can feel the anger boiling, like, they're not doing, why didn't they draft? You know, all this kind of stuff comes up through my head. It was actually, I think, a closer game than the score indicated, because at the end now, and then when I'm listening to podcasts, it's like, oh, we crushed them. Are we a top five team? You know, it's well, very positive.
A lot of people are thinking that right now, that Packers are a top five team.
And they might be, because they do have a very good offense now that they're running it correctly. I that's something I want to get into.
Right.
But I thought we'd start off by walking through the game. Any other thoughts before we kick this thing off, as it
Dave,
were?
Dave, I have no thoughts.
Yeah, that's typical. By the way, what did you think of an empty Lambeau Field?
That was just weird. I kept... every time they would kind of, you know, give a more of a distant shot that wasn't just of the game, you know, but and seeing no one there, that was just odd. And people who were, you know, like reporters who were going to the game, saying the weirdest part was outside the stadium. Well, you and I have been there, you know. I mean, it is a beehive of activity all around Lambeau Field on game day. And I guess there's no cars. There's nothing going on outside the stadium. That has got to be really weird.
Did you notice the crowd noise too? It felt like there is a high-pitched voice that was just rising or lowering. It was just kind of a like there's like something going on.
Dave. Yeah,
that's right. It was in, well, that's those are voices I hear, whether the game's on or not. That's a totally different story. All right, so you let me walk through the game, and then you tell me what you think as I walk through this game. Okay. Remember, we decided to go through a recap version. I don't know if you remember agreeing to this. Do you remember?
I don't even remember. Have we done a podcast? Is this our first one? Because I'm not really sure we've ever done a podcast before.
Yeah, it's I think it's in the 350s at this point. And I don't know if anyone responded. Did anyone care if we wanted to do the recap version? I think it was an overly abundantly clear that no one really cares. But actually, I think there was some indication that if we made it shorter, there was some preference for that.
Yeah, like the one we did that was, what, about 3 seconds that we did before this. Yeah, that was probably about the right length. Yeah,
we should have posted that one.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's kick this off. So
the Packers actually kicked it off, as I recall.
Correct. They kicked it off to the Detroit Lions. And you know what the Lions did promptly on their first drive?
Touchdown.
right down the field. Big play to their tight end Hockenson. There was a horse collar tackle. Jaire Alexander almost had an interception. I don't know if you recall. He was he had a pass defended. He almost intercepted it. But they went right down the field and scored. And now I'm thinking, this is bad. Kenny Clark's not there. They're attacking the middle of the field. They should have drafted a defensive lineman. They should have, like, all of the, I'm starting to get angry at this point. So down 0-7. Are you confident at this point, or are you just, it's too early?
No,
to...
it was, and I know this is getting to be a joke, but I was disappointed because the defense, you know, just didn't show up again. And I thought, wow, I mean, maybe the defense is this bad because this is the way that they kind of came out against the Vikings too. And I'm starting to, you know, question not just, you know, Kenny Clark being out, but just the quality of the defense generally. And they can't be this bad. And the Lions are moving it with, I guess you would say, with alacrity.
Yeah. I think the defense is two-sided. We've talked about this for years and years and years. And I actually think they're built for a lead. I think they are built to be for the pass, rushing the passer. They've got good defensive back. If they're playing San Francisco and you're down by three, I think this defense could be bad. I don't, you know, if you're running the ball a lot, getting ahead of the chains, you know, you're short down and distance kind of thing, I think this defense can really give up a lot of yards and a lot of points. But if you get a lead, then I think this defense is, this is what it's built for. It's trying to get to a lot of second and tens. You know, you got four guys that can rush the quarterback. You can do creative blitzing. You can even leave Alexander one-on-one on guys, you know, so you've got some, your corners, I think, are pretty talented. So I think if you can force the other offense to be one-dimensional, they're good at that. And I think maybe every defense is like this. If we're up 14-0, our defense is great. If we're down 14-0, we're gonna give up, you know, 500 yards. I think there's going to be a real Jekyll and Hyde with this defense, which is just like, this is a theme I think I've not heard anyone say this. It feels a lot like 2011. This is what felt like.
Except that team was really good at taking the ball away. I don't think they were very good at stopping teams at all. Now, in fairness to that team, though, they lost Nick Collins, I think, in the second week of the season. And that was a huge loss to that defense. This group, I think, is a better defense. But I don't know that they are going to be able to take the ball away as well as that 2011 team did.
Well, a big part of that was you had Charles Woodson his prime, right? But Alexander is in his prime, and, you know, he could be that kind of a player. I mean, he is really a difference maker. There were a couple of drives where he asserted himself a ton, both tackling, you know, one-on-one with guys. I think he could be that guy. And then back then, you know, Clay Matthews was –
He
was kind of like at the peak of his powers.
Right,
but
I think
you've got Zadarius, and you know Gary is putting a lot of pressure. Like, you might actually have more guys put pressure on the quarterback than you did in 11.
And you've got, you know, Preston Smith is also. I mean, and when Kenny Clark is healthy, Savage is not bad. Kevin King is, you know, is a good player. I mean, they have a lot of very solid, good players on this defense. The thing is, as what you mentioned, they're much better at stopping the pass, which in the NFL, I believe that is still, if you have to, you know, tilt one way or the other, tilt towards stopping the pass on defense because it is a passing league.
Right.
But the downside is when the other team's running the ball and you don't stop the run well, you're going to be challenged. So you're going to have to rely on the offense to get a lead. And fortunately, their offense looks to be pretty damn good this season.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if we can, I was thinking if the defense can get four or five turnovers, and I count a punt as just a long turnover, like if they can just get a few of, you know, I don't think it's two or three. I think it's got to be kind of at least in a minimum of the four or five range of just, it's an interception, a fumble, you know, or a turnover on downs. Just they can get a few. Well, then that's good enough. They might give up a lot of yards and could even give up a lot of points, but they've got to give our offense a few times to move ahead of the other offense. If they can't do that, if they trade touchdowns, or, you know, if we have a key drop on a third down and now the other team has a chance to double, you know, go two scores up on us, then I think we're in trouble. Yeah.
Yep. I think unless the offense, you know, can put him back in the game. I mean, that's the only way. And that's what happened exactly in the first half of the game on Sunday, is that they got down 11 points, but, you know, the offense was able to make up for it.
And then the defense becomes opportunistic rather than good. And I think that's fine. You know, you can't have everything. It's rare to have a team that's like, you know, the San Francisco 49ers of the 80s, where, you know, you've got great guys on offense, great guys on defense. They're all Hall of Famers. I mean, you got to pick your poison. We paid our quarterback a ton. The offense has to be 100% good on offense. It's so good it, like, makes – it's almost 50% of the defense. Like, that is our strategy for this year. But I think you could win with that. And
so far, that's the way it's shaping up. But, you know, they have been able – to, you know, bludgeon other teams offensively, and that makes their defense so much better because they can do what they do best.
Right. Well, it wasn't working out great even for the offense on the first drive. Mm-hmm. A couple things that came out in the first drive. They ended up kicking a field goal. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've noticed through the game is they are running a lot of passes as kind of crossers across the field. They'll have three guys lined up. It's almost like a pick play. Well, they'll have, you know, in a bunch formation, the first two guys cut across, and then there's a trailer. But the first two guys are kind of clearing out the space. I think there was a crossing pattern to MVS that he caught for a first down. And I thought, you know, that's almost unstoppable in a third, and unless you really bunch people up in the middle of the field. Because he was just wide open. You couldn't stay with him. He's too fast, and no one was jumping in front of him because they had to take care of the two other guys that were crossing in front. So I just thought these are the things that I just don't remember seeing crossing patterns for first downs last year, like at all. It was always sidelines or it was basically just always sidelines, you know, deep or not. You notice that? I thought the crossing pattern is a big, big part of our offense this year.
It's obvious that they are putting in the other half of the offense that we didn't see last year. There is so much stuff that they're doing that I thought they were going to do last year. And now we're seeing it all, including the cheating, you know, out of the bunch formation where two guys essentially are blocking. And then, you know, the third guy trails off in the crossing pattern. Now it's great when it happens for your team. It's not so great when it's happening against your team.
Right.
But that's a big part of this offense. I mean, those plays going across the middle where you're throwing the ball, you know, 8 yards, and you're hitting the guy in stride. The other two guys have cleared out the space, and it's a catch and run. Now, what has hurt them a little bit, though, is that, you know, they had half a dozen drops in this game, and some of those were, I think, as I recall, they were on that first drive that you're that we're talking about here.
Yep.
And that, you know, it was 12 play drive, and they used a lot of clock, and it was nice, but it could have been a lot more decisive had, you know, their guys been able to hang on to the damn ball.
Well, yeah. So it's the first one. Sternberger had a big drop, and that was down by the 5-yard line. Yeah. Oh. So this would have been a drive that would have been a touchdown, I think, because if Sternberger would have caught the ball, and I think right after that, Tanyan drops one as well. And, you know, if these guys develop into good players, you know, we're going to have relatively young, athletic tight ends. That's going to be great. But right now, it feels like they're young and inexperienced. And,
right. Yeah. And they are.
Yeah. This is what you do when you live with, you have young guys. You're constantly kind of going through growing pains. And I think they're high on Sternberger. But did he have a drop last week? And then I think he's had two this week.
Yeah. I mean, well, but both, you know, Tanyan and Sternberger are, you know, I mean, I think they are both capable, but they're a little bit uncertain with the hands at this point. But so is MVS. There was a drop. Also, Lazard had a drop. I mean, there were a lot of people dropping balls out there, you know. So it wasn't just the young tight ends. And I'm not really sure, you know, what that's all about, or if they're going to get more, you know, confident the more they see the field. I don't know what it is. The good news is, though, is that Rodgers is right there with the passes. I mean, these are drops because the ball is right there, and it's Rodgers is hitting the guys where they can catch it. They're just not putting it away the way they should.
And I hope he stays what he's doing too. It doesn't feel like he's like you're in that doghouse right away. He's throwing it back to guys if they're open. Yeah. Stay with the play. And I think that's what he got to do. If they drop it, they drop it. But he can't like void. Oh, here's my dog. They can't avoid the open receiver or try to force it into Devontae, because I thought I heard somewhere that it was pretty clear Detroit wanted to take away Devontae Adams. And if they do that, that means these other guys had to step up, and Aaron Rodgers has to give them a chance to make them pay. You know, that's he can't be stubborn.
But so far this year, he's not. So far,
yeah, right.
That's not the case. Yeah.
It's like he's playing in the offense, which I don't know what was going on last year. I saw a headline today that said something like he's made changes to clear his headspace, or he's in a happier place. Have you seen this?
Well, the only thing, I've heard about all off season too, with the whole Danica Patrick thing, and I don't know him. I don't know what it's like to be him. I don't know why there was this weird transitional thing last year, but he does seem like a different player. Like he's taking what's being given. He's not afraid to, you know, throw the ball to the check down guy, to take what the defense is giving him, to throw on rhythm. I mean, it seems like a different player.
Yeah. But what do you think about this? So then, because of the drops, we get a 4th and 6 almost at midfield, and they decide to go for it. What do you think about that? And then the play, they actually made a first down, but I think it's very questionable whether Lazard made that catch, and Detroit didn't challenge. So I guess, do you think it was a good decision? And would you have challenged that if you were Detroit?
On the first part of it, yes, I think it's definitely was an okay decision by me, because, you know, in this offense, especially, you know, you should be able to get 6 yards. They were over midfield, as I recall.
Barely.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they may be the 40-yard line. And, against Detroit especially, you should be able to do that. Now, as to whether or not Detroit should have challenged it, I don't know why they didn't. I mean, that was a real puzzler to me. Unless the only thing I can think of, and this happened against the Vikings too, the camera angles for the Packers getting like the third unit or something where they're where they're not getting very good angles, and so that makes it harder to challenge calls because you're not having enough video evidence. I don't know. It just seemed weird to me that they didn't. But in my memory of that, there didn't seem to be definitive proof. Like, you watch some of these games, like this week coming up, the Packers will play on Sunday night, and when they do that, you know, they have every conceivable angle, you know, ground shots, overhead shots, end zone, all that. But they don't seem to have that for these noon games. I'm not sure what the deal is there.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have been overturned either. But and maybe that's the decision, is if it's not really obvious, you're just not going to get the call. Did they adjust the call this year, or did they just say it's not been overruled, overturned? They just I guess, what's the language? They decided not to overturn. Like, it's more of a negative than an affirmative, or
I think they
like
say
that.
Like the call is upheld, you know?
Yeah, something like
which,
that.
Which doesn't mean it was overturned, which means that it was wrong. When it's upheld, it's, you know, yeah, we're going with the call on the field because we don't have any reason not to.
But that would have been, I mean, Detroit ended up going up 14-3, but say Detroit got the ball there and got up 14-0. I think I like the aggressive approach. I think that's it goes along with the defense, that if you're, like I said, if your offense is going to be like 80% of what you do, then you're going to have to go for it on 4th down. You can't be like, oh, let's hold them defense. No, they're not built that way. They need to score and get to that lead. And so I think the going for 4th down, there'll be a game where we're disappointed, but I think that that's a good approach.
I do too. I think generally speaking, teams do not go for it enough on 4th down. Anytime you're over midfield, I think you really got to think about it. And they were at the 42, I think, at that point. So, and it's early enough in the game to, even if the Lions go up 14-0, it's still early in the game. Yeah.
Well, they ended up only kicking a field goal, so the Packers are losing 7-3 at that point. Then Detroit gets the ball again and goes right down the field and scores again, 14-3.
I was getting nervous there because, you know, they do the same thing on the second drive, and I thought, I thought they would stiffen up a little bit on the second drive. That surprised me.
So here we have Adrian Peterson. Now, this guy has been a thorn in our side for a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had a huge run, which I had to watch it because he had a simple run to the right, and it seemed like everyone who was on that side of the defense collapsed completely to the middle, and he just ran, and there was just no one out there. And I was trying to figure out who it was. There, I think that whoever the linebacker is out there just crashed into the middle, but there was either a safety or a corner. I think it was Alexander, like, had no interest in being over in that side. He just completely let himself drift into the middle, and then ended up being no one out there. It was such a screwed up play. I was starting to feel that our defense stinks. We didn't do anything to improve it. What's wrong with us? And ended up with, and then I think Marvin Jones was a touchdown. Like, that guy always scores like 3 touchdowns and catches for like 300 yards every time he plays the Packers. Isn't that the guy the last 3 years that just killed us?
I am at this point in the game, I'm really questioning not their personnel decisions, but just the caliber of our defense generally, because I mean, the Lions really twice are able to kind of just go right down the field, and both times, you know, were long drives too. I mean, these weren't like, you know, some kind of cheapies. I mean, they really earned it. Now, of course, later on, I'm going to reverse that opinion, because once the Lions get to 14, they, you know, don't really get, they kind of get stuck on 14. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. But do you think this idea, you know, the announcers, and this is also where I discovered the benefit of having YouTube TV, so I can watch the game on my phone, is I'm like, I'm getting too angry. I'm going to start kind of cleaning up a little bit, like doing some dishes. Like, I wanted to keep myself occupied, but I had the phone with me so I could watch the game. I just felt like, if I'm going to sit here like I normally do and stare on the edge, and, you know, stare at the screens at the edge of my seat, I'm just going to get angry, and I don't want that to happen. I really don't want to be that, go back to the time when I would see if they won and then watch it kind of a thing, because I one, I have the podcast, and you know, it's no fun to do that. But I was like, after all the virus and the quarantine, the things to be upset about in this world, like, I don't want sports to make me mad anymore. I want to enjoy it or be disappointed, mildly disappointed if I can, but I just don't think the Packers will ever allow me to do that.
That, no.
So,
and the thing is that our team has been a winner for a quarter of a century, and we're still feeling this way. My God, can you imagine if we were Lions fans? Holy crap.
Well, I think that's like it would be like an evolutionary process as a fan. Like, you become, you know, you grow muscles that don't allow you to be disappointed. Like, maybe your eyesight glazes over. Like, you get a second eyelid that automatically closes every time they make a challenge or something. I guess, well, I can't imagine being a Lions.
Lions therapy. I mean, you'd actually would need therapy. You'd need it's not just psychotherapy. You need pharma therapy.
Yeah, you would. Imagine being a Lions fan that every year you were excited. This might be our year. Like, you actually, if I got into the games as much, for my whole lifetime, I can't imagine. There was a Barry Sanders little highlight there. There was maybe the Megatron. Eric Hipple was involved at one point. But I think they've been just down their luck losers for a long, long time.
Well, they're one of the teams that have never been to a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to think, how many teams are there? I guess I can't think of. I want to say there's like, what, the Browns, the Lions. It's hard to think. I mean, it seems like everyone has their moment, right? I mean, that they get there. They may lose, but at least they get there. But the Lions and Browns, and I'm sure there are others who haven't. Well, the Texans, I guess, haven't been there.
And they're no close, right? I mean, it looks like it's a rebuilding. They're probably going to fire their coach. I mean, they're already going down that Lion trail.
Well, yeah, Patricia, I think that was a reach.
Yeah. I think, the old, it looked like they are the Patriots too, or trying to.
They're trying to, they're taking all the cast offs.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's what Holmgren did with the 49ers, right? I mean, you know, when he came to Green Bay, he had all these guys who had kind of been through San Francisco at one, the Harry Sidneys, you know, of the world and people like that. But, you know, I mean, that worked out pretty well. I mean, they became a winner right away, and they haven't looked back in all this time. Hadn't worked out so well for the Lions.
No, no, it hasn't. Well, the beginning of the end starts on the second drive for Green Bay.
Yep.
I think this is the drive where Davante Adams, does he tweak? He doesn't go, he does not leave the game permanently, but I guess he tweaked his hamstring.
Correct.
In this series. And I've not heard if it's, it sounds like it's not serious, that he may be back. Maybe they just saved him, but you know, the hamstring is not great. We got a bye coming up early, but you know, that's a lingering injury that we don't need to have this as the year goes on.
Yeah, that's a concern, because those, depending on the severity, I mean, they can be, you know, you miss a month kind of injuries. His didn't seem to be that significant, because I want to say that he did come back a little bit in that game and before going out for good.
Yeah,
but
he did.
So I'm thinking that, you know, maybe this is one that, you know, he'll be able to play on Sunday night. But when that guy, I want to say you need him to win, but I'm thinking of last year when they kind of played better without him. So I still think that you're a better team with 17 on the field. There's no doubt about that. Maybe they can get by for a game or two, but I think that would dramatically alter this team if he was, you know, lost for the rest of the season. I don't care how well they did last year. I think they're integrated better this year, where they need him more this year than last year, where it may have been a plus in some ways to not have him. Because it seems like he's – what I'm talking about integration is they don't seem like they're forcing the ball to him
right,
like they were last year. And so when he was taken out of the equation, I think the team became – better, because they had to spread it around. Well, now they are spreading it around naturally, and just having him changes
the
way the defense has to play. Yeah. So
right.
That's a concern, but I don't think nothing I have read or heard suggests that it's something he's going to have to miss the week.
That's good. Cause you know, even though the Saints lost, you know, I think, you know, having all your guys, you know, ready to play is going to be important. But, you know, if you look at, all right, you got to stop Aaron Rodgers. Well, I think defense are going to now start to say, we got to stop Aaron Jones.
Mm.
But if you commit too much to that or the running game, you know, I trust that Aaron Rodgers, the way he's playing, he's spreading around. But I don't know if I trust all of our receivers with the way they drop things. But Devontae, I don't worry about that. So I think if we have between Rodgers and Jones, but and Devontae, like you want, and then, yeah, but the key though, even with those three big guns, is you got to run the offense the way it's designed.
Exactly.
There's going to be somebody open, and you got to hit the guy in rhythm with that. So if Devontae's part of that, great. But if he forces the four, I think that's all what you said. I don't think it's great. I don't care if he was twice as good as he was. If you don't run the offense as it's designed, I don't think you're going to nearly do as well as what they're doing now. But he, you know, he was involved in the second drive, but really it was a kind of more of an Aaron Jones show. The thing that I liked about this drive was the touchdown itself. It was on a hurry up. It kind of did a quick huddle, I thought, to make sure that the linebacker that covered Jones stayed in the game, and they hit him for a touchdown. So his first touchdown. And I thought, you know, it does make me really frustrated when they always are getting that game clock down to zero almost every time. But then what the nice thing is every once in a while you can throw it in there. We're going to do a hurry up. And again, it's like it's finally they're using common sense. Like you don't have to never use hurry up, or we're using hurry up. Like sometimes you can do hurry up once in a while out of the blue, you know, keep the defense guessing. Use motion, all these things to make it more difficult for the defense. I think that's more powerful than saying, let's always do one or the other.
I agree.
You know, and I think that worked there, and Jones was open on that quick huddle and got a touchdown. So now the Packers are down 14 to 10. We get to Detroit now. Detroit now is start to fold. Are you ready for the fold?
Yeah. This is, you know, the quarter changes at this point. We go in the second quarter, and order is restored.
Order is restored. You're right. The Packers score early in the second quarter, and then as Detroit gets the ball, they finally get their first stop, their first turnover. Alexander defends a pass on 1-on-1. I feel like, you know, you can do a lot of things with your defense, man, if you have a shutdown corner. And I think Alexander can be one of those kinds of corners. Yep. And he had a tackle for a loss. And this, he's a great player. He's just a great player.
Yep.
But I think the what really hurt him, there was a cheap shot on Lancaster, which I thought was low and behind him, that this was going to be, his knee is blown. But I don't think Lancaster is good enough to get hurt like that and actually have it last. It's kind of, he's just the guy that, well, he's back in there. Even though he completely got crushed from behind his knee, he's back in. But that created a 15-yard penalty. And I think I saw from a different angle someone put on Twitter. It was a pretty cheap shot.
Ended up. When I saw that, I was thinking something must have gone on, or maybe even during the course of the game or several plays before it, he did something to that guy, and that guy was looking for a way to even the score because it was so late and it was so blatant. Yeah. It seemed personal to me and not a guy who didn't hear the whistle, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he went down kind of like a theatrical movie death, you know?
It was like the Premier League soccer.
One and the same. They finally get a punt, but the Packers can't convert. They get the ball. First down, we get a pretty decent run by Jamal Williams. And I thought, what do you think? I was going to ask you, what do you think of Jamal Williams?
Like that guy. I know he only carried 8 times, but he had like an 8-yard average. And, you know, when your second running back is that good, I kept thinking during the course of the game, there's probably a number of teams where he's a starter. I mean, he's a solid player. He's not obviously as dynamic and fluid and exciting as Aaron Jones. And I want to talk more about him and his contract later on in the podcast. But this is a really, really solid second guy. And I'm a little bit of a sucker for him too, because you know, he's the guy playing catch with the fans before the game. You know, he's the guy, you know, went to BYU and, you know, fessed up to, you know, the unforgivable sin of being in, you know, somebody's dorm after 10 o'clock or whatever, or he didn't drink his milk at dinner or some kind of crap like that. Whatever it was, he seems like a really good guy. Interviews with him are kind of funny and surreal. I mean, he's a likable dude, and I was delighted to see him, you know, really be an impact guy out there. I was really pleased with that, and I'm glad they didn't cut him, when they got A.J. Dillon. I was afraid that was going to be the end of him. Instead, they got 3 running backs that can play.
Yeah, well, and that's the way you should do it. You have your veterans, and you've got now, you know, you don't have to count on Dillon, although I think Dillon accounted for himself pretty well later on, in garbage time. But
he's going to be good. I got high hopes for that guy.
I think so too. But you know, Jamal Williams had an excellent game, and I never noticed the pickup blitzes that he has. But I'm sure there could be some big plays that he.
Oh yeah, he's excellent at that. In fact, Jones is getting better too. Dillon won't see the field in meaningful snaps until he gets better at that. He's never had to do it. And in the NFL, you know, you got to be able to block. And Williams is really good at that.
Yeah. Well, it's gets to a 3rd and 7. They take a deep shot for MVS, who makes a valiant effort and gets a shot in the head for his efforts.
That was bad.
You know, I was hoping like maybe we could have, you know, put ourselves ahead before halftime, but it's not going to happen. But then the Packers look like they're going to go for it. And who was the announcer? It's not Chris Wallace. It's
I'd watch a game where Chris Wallace was doing play by play. That would be interesting.
Debates. Yeah.
There'd be a lot of, you know, well, sir, I'm not convinced that was the right play call, sir.
But, you know, whoever it was, he says, you know, are the Packers going to go for it? And he says, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers. And for the life of me, I thought he said, but he is the king of kings. I thought, king of kings. I if you had the king of kings as your quarterback.
It would depend on what, you know, if Belichick was throwing up a defense against the king of kings, you really don't know the outcome there, do you?
I don't know. Yeah. I thought, why are we even in a 4th down situation?
That's right. You'd score every play, right?
I mean. I had to play it back. He said he's the king of cadence. I thought, wow, that is high praise. He's the king.
That's what I was going to say. That, you know, Emmanuel under center. I don't know. That's pretty impressive.
So I just had to point that out. I'm glad that was we figured that out. But they ended up not going for it and punted. And this is when the Lions really looked at themselves in the mirror and said, you know,
we're the Lions. Yeah, that's right.
The first so Stafford goes back and basically gets a covered sack where he's on the deep in his own territory. And then they have a flag where they, I think it was false start or motion or something. So they stopped the clock on third down.
Yeah, it was holding
it could not have been a worse drive for the Lions. They took no time off. It was a three and out, actually moved backwards.
Yeah.
And, right. The announcer said, I thought this was an interesting question. They said, you know, if I'm in Lambeau with a lead, I would run three times and just go into the tunnel. And I thought, but you know, you never win that way either. So do you think that they, you know, throwing for it on first down, I mean, ended up not working. Would you have just run three times and gone out with the lead? Or do you think it's good to, you know, score when you can? The Packers are going to score two. So as you're a Lion fan, you got to try and get a two-score lead.
You know, this is one of those cases where it's really easy in retrospect to say, well, hell yeah, they should have run. But I think probably what they did is what a team that wants to win is going to do. And especially when there's no fans there, why not? It's just the problem they had is they're the Lions. I mean, that's the biggest problem that they had.
So Packers get the ball with a minute left on their own 38 and end up promptly getting 30 yards on penalties. The one was a headshot to MVS, who came out of the tent only to come out and get hit in the head again.
Which, you know, at that point, I'm starting to wonder about the guy's health. I mean, we've talked about this over the last 5 years or so since the concussion situations become a lot more apparent. And when I see guys getting hit in the head like that and then coming back out, well, one thing I'm wondering is, okay, are they lying? Are the doctors, I think the Packer doctors are pretty conservative, but
I think so, you know, too.
Are the players, though, a guy like MVS who knows, you know, he's got a lot to prove. And, you know, his incentive is to get out there and play because his career isn't really secure at this point.
Yeah.
And so he might be taking chances. And then he gets hit again. I'm thinking, boy, you know, I was thinking, does he think he's back at the high school prom? I mean, does he know where he is? You know, I kind of worry about that. But apparently he's okay. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of between the players in the macho culture in the NFL. And on some teams, I think some of the medical staff might even look the other way. I don't think you're going to make football, at least professional football for sure. I don't think you're going to make it safe for head injuries. It's basically a head injury waiting to happen. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's just what this is.
Maybe the concussion protocol is like, quick, what's your name? Now spell it. And no one knows how to spell it. They're like, I think it's right. Like, get it back in there.
Well, I think that's
MBS. You're good.
On some teams, I think that's the way it is, I'm not suggesting that, you know, some of the team doctors are, you know, being influenced by the team ownership. Now, maybe that happens, but I think it's like any other kind of doctor. I mean, there's a variety of doctors. I mean, the doctor you go to in St. Louis is, you know, going to be of a different caliber probably than the doctors that I'm, you know, seeing here. And I mean that both ways. I mean, just there's going to be different opinions. There's a variety of opinions. It's a practice, the medical practice. And so a conservative doctor like Dr. McKenzie and the people the Packers have, they're naturally conservative by nature, because that's the kind of guys they hire on the medical staff. I'm not sure that all the medical staffs view the same kind of injury in the same way. And that's why there's a variety of treatments. And I think on some teams, a guy who's allowed to go back into play, on other teams, the same situation, that player probably not allowed to go back in and play.
We're looking at a venture capital fund right now that's in the medical field. And they did a study where they gave a diagnosis to 35 experts. And they had basically 35 different recommendations for this patient, spanning from, you know, the one extreme to the other, to the degree that if you saw it plotted, it would almost look like a random event. It was crazy.
Yep.
And their theory is, I think their phrase is 25% doctor, which means that we're slowly going to have AI and it replace diagnoses for these things. So I wonder how that'll be in football. You know, if we ever have a point where your concussion protocol will be an AI-based solution rather than, you know, someone who may have a conflict or, you know, or maybe the opposite, maybe want to be overly conservative because they don't want to be one of those, you know, doctors. But maybe the whole thing would be much fairer through impartial AI at some point.
Well, I think that's very true because so much of medicine is based on opinion and experience, and that's why it's a practice. It's like the law. It's like a lot of things that your opinion that you have in your job, which involves evaluating, you know, markets and investment opportunities, you've had a lot of experience since the days when we worked together in Madison. So decisions you make now are informed by all those years of experience. And so you're maybe going to make different decisions today than you would have before because you're a dynamic, evolving human being. And I think the same thing happens when they're diagnosing injuries on the field in football. The doctor who's making that call is not going to maybe make the same call when, you know, the Las Vegas Raiders are playing their game. He might not make that same call as that doctor would because of their experience is going to dictate a different set of perceived outcomes based on what they've seen before.
I agree with that. And by the way, can you, without looking, can you spell MVS's full name?
No. And why would I want to when I can call him MVS?
I had to look it up myself. I mean, I know I said Marquez Valdez, like I, but I would have, I might be able, as I'm looking at it now, I might have been able to get that right, but I even think the Marquez would be, if anyway. I hope that is not the concussion protocol because, like I said, no, I don't think anyone would understand it. But I wanted to mention, talk about that last, the touchdown. I thought that was a beautiful play. I don't remember running that before. I don't know if it's because we didn't have the tight end to do it or, it, you know, just a new play. But it was sort of a fake tight end, you know, run to the corner. But it was get to the goal line, stop. Rodgers will throw it right there unless the defender, it's almost like the back shoulder throw almost, but in the middle of the field, clear out the area. So it's just you, him, one-on-one. And, you know, this is a great play for Rodgers because Rodgers is so accurate. He can put it up to that spot. If you got a big Tanyan or Sternberger or whatever kind of burger, you kind of a guy you got is, you know, can you get, throw that right there and bam, that's like a, that's a very hard play to defend. I thought that was a great play.
Yeah, I did too. And I don't have the exact play locked in my head here, but I think that's a play that other teams have used. It's maybe not as common in the Packer offense that we're used to seeing, but I don't think it's like, you know, kind of, you know, copyrighted, patented, trademarked, you know, by, you know, LaFleur or anything like that. I just think that it's something we haven't seen a lot of in the Packer offense, but I'm just kind of going off of memory here without seeing it.
Yeah, it's a great play. I mean, it looked like, I suppose you could have that same play and have him then do a stutter step and go toward the corner of the end zone and throw it over the top. But, you know, the offensive guy knows what he's going to do. The defensive is trying to guess. And I think it looks like he's running a route where he's turning toward the corner. Bam, stops on the dime. The ball's right there. Got a big, beefy guy that can catch it and touchdown. And so now that Packers up 17-14, we were just down 14-3 not that long ago. And, you know, not the route isn't on, but now, you know, the game is kind of reset and almost became 17-17. Detroit had a couple passes and moved down.
This was disappointing. This, because that was like the end of the half against the Vikings. So the half starts off with the same porous defense as with Minnesota, and it ends almost the same way as it did against the Vikings in the first half. And I was like, oh, geez. I mean, how can you allow them to move into field goal position with, I think they only had ball like 14 seconds or something. How can you let that happen?
It's like two plays.
But 31 yards,
I thought was interesting is they were going to go with the Hail Mary because they ran out of time.
Yeah.
And then Preston Smith was offsides, which forced them to try the field goal. I almost wondered if they baited him because, you know, with a Hail Mary, I just had a feeling if we do this Hail Mary, I'm not super confident. A 50-some yard field goal. I mean, Prater has been.
But that guy's got a big leg. That guy
does. He does. So I don't think they did bait him into like, you're giving me 5 more yards. You want to try it now? But if they did, they're playing, you know, fourth dimensional chess there. Which would be pretty cool. But regardless, he misses going to the halftime. We're up 17-14. It went from we're in trouble to, you know, now we're kind of back to kind of, you know, it's a 3-point lead. It's not a, we haven't dominated them yet. And this, it's, things have turned because Detroit has really did themselves bad at the end. But it was otherwise, you know, up to that point, it was a pretty close game.
Well, I think what made me a little more confident was because they're getting the ball back start second half, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But this felt like the classic double up, right, where they got that touchdown. They were able to keep them off the board barely, and now they got the double. And I just sort of felt that, ah, good, this is going to be like the old times. You score at the end of the first half, you get the ball second half, you score again, and, you know, then the momentum is there. So I was feeling pretty good at the end of the first half.
Yeah, I thought, you know, at least, you know, the offense was moving the ball. And, you know, that double up, that was a big, big deal in 2011. We did that. That was when right? Yeah. It's, again, has lots of shades of 2011. Well, that brings us to halftime. Are you ready for halftime of the podcast?
Well, I am ready for the halftime because my glass is just about empty. And that means we have to stop and do a refill. And you know what needs to be refilled, Dave? You know what it does?
Philip Rivers?
Well, yeah, he could really use that. You know, our PayPal could probably use some refilling. I mean, it is a new season. I think we're running kind of on E, as I recall there.
Yeah, because I've been spending all of it all summer. Yeah, all
summer. Well, you know, on hookers and blow. And I know it's a long summer, you know. So
it is. Yeah. How about you get by?
If you want to make sure Chris and Dave have enough to keep us in hookers and blow for the entire off season coming up, help us out now. Going to PayPal. It's PackersTherapy@yahoo.com, and you can, you know, tuck a little bit in our G-string. We would appreciate that very much if you could do that for us. We also have a Patreon. I have no idea how it works, but you can find us there too. And we would very much appreciate your generosity. If you like the podcast and you, for some reason, you listen, I'm not sure why, but for whatever reason that might be, if you want to help us out either on PayPal or on Patreon, that would be much appreciated. So
don't send pictures of yourself.
No,
that's not the kind of hookers and blow we're looking at.
No. Well, perhaps if, you know, if you've got a very attractive spouse or something, but that's a whole different matter. We don't want to talk about that right now. What I do want to talk about before we go into the break, what's up with Cleet Blakeman? Has that guy always been cut that way? I mean, he is, my God, rippling. Dude, you know, I mean, wow. He must have spent, you know, the quarantine, you know, pumping iron in the basement at Blakeman HQ, man. That guy's happening.
Well, nice. He's they have other jobs, right? These are not full-time officials, is that? Or in the NFL, is it? No, isn't that the whole thing? They have other jobs, or like,
Yeah. They're insurance salesmen, or, you know, or maybe he's Hockley's workout buddy. Now that Hockley's no longer refereeing, you know, this is maybe he and Cleet, you know, throw the medicine ball around or something. I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to get that in there before we go to the half here, because, wow, I didn't sleep for 3 nights, Dave. It was absolutely incredible. Cleet Blakeman's rippling biceps. I mean,
yeah, it's just to be clear, that's the head, what do you call him? Is the head referee?
I think the referee is the head official.
Got it. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a little break. Chris and Dave back on Packers Therapy right after this. Chris and Dave back with Packers Therapy, and apparently Dave's dog is as well. I'm not sure if that bark actually got into the podcast. I can only hope that it did.
What? What are you talking impressive. About? That wasn't my dog. That's my stomach growing.
All right. We will talk about the second half of the Packers' 42-21 when they doubled up on the Lions. And it turns out that the first drive of the second half is a double up from the end of the first half. So there's not a lot to talk about with this particular, quote, drive. It was more of a one-man show.
So first down, Packers on the 25, handoff to Aaron Jones, touchdown. Just like that.
Yeah, bust between the two safeties. It was absolutely classic stuff. He just split those guys and outran them in the end zone. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it's maybe this is a good time you wanted to talk about his contract.
You read my mind, my friend. Yes.
Well, we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, we have. You know, the thing was, when that happened, I looked over at my son and said, they need to get this contract done before the start of the fourth quarter. I mean, he'll probably have to leave the game in the fourth quarter to run upstairs, sign the contract. This is hard for me because NFL running backs are sadly disposable because they have short careers. They take a hell of a beating, and of any position, I think on the field, they're replaceable. The difference here is that when a back is truly special, not just good, I think that is a little bit different case, and you have to treat that differently. You know, the fella in New Orleans is an example. Kamara, you know, he's an example of that. And I think Dalvin Cook, and they both signed large deals. And I think Aaron Jones is that kind of guy. Now, what makes it even harder is that, you know, the guy has had knee problems. Luckily, not ACL stuff, but knee problems nonetheless. He's missed quite a few games, but he is really the most special back they've had since Amon Green. And, you know, and I was a big Amon Green honk. I mean, I just, you know, I love that guy. I thought he was a great, great player. But this guy, while maybe not as powerful and durable as Amon Green was, this guy's really, really special. Yeah. And I think this is someone they probably have to sign. The issue, though, becomes we were talking about Jair Alexander in the first half of the podcast. He's coming up due also, and you're going to have to pay him, and that's a premium player. You've got other guys.
And a harder one to fill.
Right. I mean,
I would say. Right.
I mean, this is a critical. You've got a couple guys behind behind Jones who can fill in admirably, but you don't have that behind Alexander.
Right.
And that makes this hard. I'm usually not a guy that says, you know, pay big money to Jones or to a running back. But this is a guy I'm going to make an exception for, even though you've got, Corey Linsley coming up this year. Who else? They have a couple of guys who are coming up on.
Is Bakhtiari not signed yet?
You know, I think he's coming up. I don't think he's coming up this year, though.
I thought, the works, right? I thought another.
If Bakhtiari's coming up, then that's probably the first guy you have to sign because they've got, and even in this game, I mean, they've got thinness on that offensive line. And I'm going to look up his contract situation.
If you had to, Alexander, Bakhtiari, and Jones, I mean, if you think, like, who is the MVP of this game? Well, it was Aaron Jones, for sure. But if I, even after this game, if you had to rank, who do you sign first? I don't think Jones is one or two in that situation. Do you?
That's a good point. If between those three guys, and he is a 2021 unrestricted free agent, by the way.
Who is?
I'm sorry, Bakhtiari is.
He is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So.
And so that's. Let me say that's uncomfortable. Because this is you need Bakhtiari, and I think you need Alexander. Although Alexander, he is in his third year now, right? So he's got another year left on his deal, and they can also give him a fifth year. I think how that works. So he maybe isn't a priority, but I know Linsley is up, and Bakhtiari is coming up right behind him. You may have to keep your powder dry for some of that stuff, and start thinking ahead. You know, I don't know. I like Jones. I think he's a really special guy. But if the plan is to make AJ Dillon your guy next year, maybe they resign Williams as a number two guy and let Jones walk because of the injury risk that goes with that position.
I mean, I think it's such a hard thing. I mean, if you could sign everybody, you would. I think they have a much better chance of winning with Jones than Jamal Williams, Dillon, and some rookie, you know, next year. But, you know, signing Jones but giving up some other positions that are harder to fill, I think, you know, you get hurt there too. So, and I feel like, you know, from a replacement perspective, like say, you know, the Packers let Jones go and someone like Jonathan Taylor is available. Like he probably would be. I mean, Jonathan Taylor was drafted in the first round, I believe, but you know, there are stud running backs that come out that are,
I think he was second round.
Yeah. So maybe he fell down.
Yeah.
I would, you know, a good line and a good offense. Like, I don't know if he can make the catch that Aaron Jones made. Cause that was something down the road. Like maybe we sign him because he's not just a running back. He's actually, it's like Kamara. He's an offensive weapon, both as a pass catcher and a pass run carrier. So that combination is special. There are not a lot of those around. But I do think like you can replace maybe 80% of his production with maybe someone else. And I mean, I love Aaron Jones. And I he's going to have a great year, I think, if he stays healthy. I just don't know if you can make him the highest paid like running back.
Oh, no. You know? I was thinking paying something more along the lines of between what Cook got and what Kamara got. I don't think
that still like in the, I mean, that's near the top though, right? It's maybe
I think you're talking about like a $10 million average on that. And that's significant, but let's think about, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you're going to pay Aaron next year for sure.
Yeah.
But after that, I'm not sure if they're paying Aaron anymore. And so maybe you can backload the commitment that you have on Jones for after you're not having to pay
Rodgers
anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what needs to happen is Rodgers needs to do a Tom Brady and say, yeah, you know, I'll give us some money for him, right?
Sure. Like, sure.
If he wants to, he's got all the money he needs and he's in a better headspace, like, give up some of that money, man. Give us some of some Jones.
Yeah, I think the headspace that he's in is like,
he's counting his money.
Yeah.
Well, you know, after a touchdown, what do you think about the Lambeau Leap with no fans?
I think it was played for a joke and it was fine. I mean,
but every time, do you think?
Time is probably ridiculous. I mean, it's like any good joke. The first time it's hilarious, the second time it's lame. You know.
But, you know, sometimes, like with my jokes, the eighth time, it's hilarious again. At least that's what I tell my kids.
It's hilarious again because you're making an ass of yourself. And what's funnier than that, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then what do you think about Aaron Jones' shades, which I am convinced that you're in a contract year. If you're scoring touchdowns, you wear the shades, you are marketing yourself. You are trying to, you know, you can't take your helmet off like Emmitt Smith used to do after every touchdown. You know, you do that on the sidelines and you become not just sort of the Aaron Jones. He's a fine player, really good. You know, he's like now he's becoming a personality and that may bring a few dollars or, you know, his way. I think that's a plan thing. Do you think any thoughts on the shades?
Yeah. I think those are specially made Oakleys, I think, as I recall. And, you know, he started becoming a personality last year when he waved to the guy in Dallas.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, yeah. And so he does have a little bit of a personality, but he's not a jerk. He's not a, you know, jackwad asshole. He's not that guy. I mean, he's a good guy. I think he's having fun with it. I don't think it's any kind of a particular problem. I have become convinced though that he's special enough that he's worth paying. But if it comes down to a choice between, you know, Bakhtiari and Jones, it's, you know, welcome to AJ Dillon, as far as I'm concerned.
I think so. I mean, the only other thing is I think Jones is younger, but within a running back's age, you probably have
he's
to add
older,
some years.
Yeah. And the fact that he's had surgeries too. I mean, that, you know, he's had the meniscus done a couple of times. So I guess it's one of those things where regardless of which way they go, they're going to be right and they're going to be wrong, you know?
Yeah, that's probably right. Well, Detroit now, sensing the game is getting out of control, down 24-14, promptly go 3 and out and punt.
Because now they're really feeling their inner lion.
Yeah, they're really exploring that space.
That headspace, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Aaron Rodgers' headspace is only getting better and better. It's but you know, this drive, there's lots of the Packers end up punting on this next drive. A lot of weird things happen on this drive. First of all, Aaron Rodgers gets hit, I think, for the first time of the season.
Yeah.
And if you watch it, he takes a blow to the head.
Yeah.
A helmet to helmet hit that they did not call. I was shocked by that. I think we should kudos the offensive line for keeping him really. I think one part of it is that he's getting rid of the ball faster, but the offensive line, I think, is doing a great job protecting. But in that case, he took a headshot. I'm surprised there's no penalty on that.
Yes, I was too, because he's at the caliber of player that the NFL protects.
Right.
But I would make one observation about this drive. And it is also true with the punt they had to do in the first half. It wasn't like some kind of lame-ass, limp-wristed 3 and out. I mean, it was an 8 plays.
Yeah.
They moved it 55 yards. Yeah, they had to punt, but it wasn't what I would consider to be an open or an empty possession. I mean, they did some good things, and they moved the ball on it.
One of which was the catch that Aaron Jones made down the field at, like, peaking. Yeah.
That's the other thing about this guy, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one reason why I am breaking out of my usual don't sign a running back thing, because the guy can catch the ball, and it's not just the swing passes. I mean, he had a couple of those in this game, too. He's a good catch and run guy, but he's done this before. I mean, he's good down the field. He can line up wide and be like a wide receiver, and he can catch the ball like a wide receiver can, and that makes him more than just a running back. You know, it makes him a multi-dimensional threat.
Yeah, and I think in that way, if he can, you know, you might not need that other wide receiver, because another one would get in the way of having Aaron Jones have less catches or less touches.
Well, right. Yeah, you know, exactly.
Even though I do still wish they would have drafted a wide receiver, and I that would be active, and that as we get later on with the drops, because now the drops, it's a drop parade now for the next few plays. After the catch that Jones has, Sternberger has the second drop. I think marches down the sideline, and I think they probably right to his car and then back to his apartment.
That's what I assumed was going to happen. I thought at the same time that they were signing Jones, they were going to cap, you know, Sternberger.
They're going to, part of the pay is going to come from Sternberger.
Exactly.
Now, this guy, I think, you know, he's a young guy, and but this is part of the MVS is in this now, and is that you're going to have to, the upside might be high. And I think with MVS, he has the next drive, he's got 2 drops.
Yeah.
But, you know, then he later on, he does a great job. So his upside is high.
He's playing with a concussion, Dave, at this point, right?
That's true.
I mean, he was rolling around on the field, and he comes back in and gets hit in the head. I'm surprised that the guy could even know what side of the ball to line up on.
we'll get back to that. But I also think, Sternberger had a drop. There was a throw to Lazard in the end zone that I think was into the vicinity around him that he might have been able to catch, but it was incomplete. And then Lazard had a drop, and then there was a sack in there too. So we ended up getting out of field goal range. We hit punted. But Chris, something else happened right as that punt was happening. A very Lions thing. The guy who signaled a fair catch.
Decides
to block, backs them up to the 5-yard line. That is huge.
Yes.
Because on the very first play, Shandon Sullivan, who gave me a cameo on my birthday, by the way.
Yes, I remember that. That was great.
So he's my guy. From now on, he'll be my guy, Sullivan. Touchdown, interception. We're up 31-14.
At that point, it's over.
Yeah. It's over. And Detroit puts, you know, the final nail in the coffin by getting the ball back and going 3 and out. So
yeah, I mean, well, at this point, they're in full Lions. Okay. Yeah. At this point, they are doing the Lions thing. Packers have scored 31 straight points. Order has been restored. And I got at this point, I don't know about you, but at this point, after they went 3 and out, I began feeling that 2011, when you're kind of in the middle of the second half.
Yeah.
And it's like, Oh, right. God, yeah. Get a snap here, you know? Yeah, it just kind of had that feeling, you know, where it was inevitable, and it's like, okay, what's final score going to be here, you know?
Yeah, you know what it is? It's if you're on the couch, you're willing to, like, turn around and face the couch and just listen. That's when you know you're really winning. You're not standing in front of your TV. You're just kind of chilling out. It's great. So the defense to start the second half goes 3-and-out, pick 6, 3-and-out.
Yeah, so, nice. That was nice. That was nice. But it's the Lions, though. Okay, we have to qualify that with it's against the Lions. This is the team that let the Bears win the week before. So yeah.
Well, the next drive, MVS drops the ball twice. Once in the end zone, beautiful pass, goes off his. I mean, fingertips would be too. That sounds more generous than it is. It went off his fingertips because he stabs at it with his fingertips rather than just grazes them like it's out. If it's
he's seeing like 3 footballs coming at him, you know, at this point. So let's give the guy a break, okay?
So I guess they say this is the 6th drop now. I think MVS may have 3. Sternberger has maybe 2. Lazard maybe have 1 or 2. So we're getting a lot of drops here from younger players. This is not good. But we do get a field goal. We're up 34-14. I think we can probably march to the rest of this game. Detroit gets the ball back and scores a touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, and it was a decent drive, too. I mean, they went 75 yards, 8 plays. That was a legit, you know, drive, which kind of surprised me. But this is what happens. You know, you get up 20 points. We knew it was over. Packers knew it was over. And I that may have been one of those kind of, you know, exhaling kind of drives, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess to say, well, of course they won. The Lions stink. Well, you know, on that drive, I think the touchdown in particular, Stafford is a good quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
I think their offense has some decent players. And I'm hoping that Detroit's actually kind of a 500 team that we kind of took out pretty handily. You know, that would mean that we're really good. So I guess in some ways that makes me feel that Detroit is, you know, they might win some games, but we're up now 34-21. We get the ball back, score a touchdown in this drive too. And that's a huge deal that, you know, that offense is taking care of business. Yep. They score. We'll score.
What do you think about the 2-point conversion there?
Well, before we get to that, one, I want to point out the MVS caught a deep ball down the sideline. Yeah. So he caught
nice
the ball
play.
In the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really nice.
Yeah,
third down.
The ball in the middle. Yeah.
But the touchdown, I watched it. It's pretty interesting. What they did with this play is they lined up, I think, 2 wide receivers on the right. Swervin Irvin comes into motion down to the left. And then, but before they hike, he does returns back to the right side, but does the big swing way around Rodgers.
It's like the CFL. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the safety who's covering him is running with him and then kind of completely clears himself out. They end up handing I guess it was a pass to, was it a run? No, I don't remember.
The touchdown?
Yeah.
It was a 14-yard run.
He runs to the left where like all the motion kind of, and all the receivers are on the right side. They give it to Jones on the left and he marches in for a touchdown. And I just thought, you know, what Swervin Irvin did was nothing. I mean, it was decoy. It was all just motion, but I love it. It made movement on the defense. And I don't know how much maybe the middle linebacker, I didn't see him move, you know, toward Irvin or anything like that. But I think you must, you know, there's part of you that's pulling you left and all of a sudden, you know, you're not taking a jump to the right. You may be a half step slow. And that's great. Those are all things I don't think they did much last year. And they go up 42-21. And now you're right. They do the 2-point conversion. And what was the question? Would I have done that and go up?
Well, it seemed gratuitous to me. I think I know why they did it, because it puts you up 3 touchdowns and 3 extra points, I guess. But even if it's 41-21, you probably still need, you know, 3 touchdowns, right, to be able to. Of course, 3 touchdowns, 3 extra points puts you in the lead. So maybe that's why they did it. It just seemed a little gratuitous to me. You know, it also made it the score nicer, you know, right?
It did. And now we can call the doubling up. And,
exactly.
And there's the doubling up at halftime, the doubling up the score. That might have to be in our title. and we'll have to work that out. But I guess the rest of the game is I get the two things, two players, maybe three players I want to point out as the game goes out is first is Rashawn Gary.
Yeah.
How do you like this guy? This guy, you know, they keep talking about how he is the second coming of not the King of Kings, but Julius Peppers.
Well, then. That's a much talked about second coming, though. You're right about that. Yeah,
we're all waiting for Julius Peppers to return
in a cloud of glory, probably. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. But you know, he's putting pressure on the quarterback. Last week, you know, he helped with the safety for Alexander had on the interception by Sullivan. Gary was putting pressure on that one. I mean, this guy's pretty active. I mean, Za'Darius runs that defense. He is.
Oh yeah, he's the man.
He's the straw that stirs the drink. Is that
he really is
the cat's meow?
He's the Reggie Jackson, you're saying, of the Green Bay Packers in 2020. Yeah, you know, the thing about Gary is that he hasn't made a lot of those dynamic, dramatic splash plays. But you look at that pick six. I mean, that's where the pressure was coming from. You know, he forced that throw.
Yeah,
and that resulted in the pick six. And he's been one of those guys that maybe it's not always showing up on the stat sheet, but he's influencing plays. And that is extremely valuable. I really thought, you know, when I read about this guy coming out of college, I was thinking, you know, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. I mean, yeah, I kind of thought and even looked at his highlight reel, which didn't really impress me that
under
much.
Impressed in Michigan,
yeah,
too. Right.
Yeah, right. And so I was thinking, boy, this feels like some of the guys they've drafted in the past because, you know, the numbers are incredible and all that stuff. But he's starting to look like a player. He's starting to you know, influence plays. And I think the next step for him is going to be actually, you know, becoming a Za'Darius Smith kind of, you know, light up the stat sheet and make splash plays beyond just influencing what goes on the field. So I'm highly encouraged in your parlance. I would say he's a buy at this point.
He's a what?
A buy. What, not hold, about? not sell.
Oh, but, oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah. You remember,
like,
you
a bye week. Well, yeah. No, you jumped into my world too quick.
You kind of work in this stuff, don't you? I mean, it's what you always told me anyway, but yeah, maybe yeah. You're just making that up. I don't know.
You pronounced it wrong. It's buy. No, never mind. But yeah, I think his stock is on the rise. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just great because I think, you know, Za'Darius is gonna put pressure, they're gonna move him around. But as he's creating havoc, you know, I think Preston Smith is certainly still a strong player, had a great season last year, a lot of sacks. But I think, like, having that third guy, maybe Gary's even your second, and Preston can kind of mop up a little bit. Preston has been somewhat.
He's been quiet. He's been quiet. Yep.
But I think I don't think that's a problem yet. But yep. Gary might be, if you have three guys that can meet you at the quarterback kind of a situation when you're up by, you know, 20, 21 points, the double upper. That's great. I mean, this is the formula that the Packers need, and they need to get there quick, because when they play against Drew Brees, who gets rid of the ball really fast, a lot of dinking and dunking down the field, you need to be able to get to that quarterback quickly.
Well, Brees has shown his age a little bit too, it seems. So that's going to be, well, we probably should save that for the next podcast, but you know, I think he's vulnerable, maybe.
I hope so.
I hope I'm not premature with saying that, but yeah.
Yeah, you probably jinxed it. Well, after the punt, you know what time it is after the punt? It's A.J. Dillon time.
Yeah, baby.
And, you know, he not the first drive they had a couple carries. The second drive, he gets a 10-yard run, which creates the over on our betting lines, which I think that's what they're playing with there. But, you know, the dude falls forward. And there are two plays where he got hit in the backfield and ended up with like a 3 or 4 yard carry. And then I think the one where he kind of got to the line of scrimmage, it was a 10-yard plus first down kind of run with, you know, carrying guys on his back. He's a load, this guy. And I wish that they probably could have used him a drive or two earlier to try to, you know, make this thing, you know, maybe the drive before, well, I guess the drive before they had the Jones touchdown, but one or two before where you could, like, really feed this guy, work the clock down, get first downs because he's dragging people. That's pretty cool. We'll see how that develops.
Right, dragging people. He's running them over. I mean, he is lighting up fools, my friend. he is as the old broadcaster Keith Jackson, not the Packers tight end, but the broadcaster Keith Jackson would always say, he's a hoss of a man. AJ Dillon is a hoss of a man.
yeah, and he's getting it's great. You know, we're up with these leads enough for him to get some carries. I wonder if he'll get any significant time early this season, or are they going to just keep kind of feeding him little by little and only if there's an injury will we see. I mean, they certainly aren't hurting at running back, but...
Well, here's the thing about this offense generally that I'm seeing it this year. I didn't see it last year, but there's a couple of things. It's not the same from week to week, and that is impressive. It's also within the offense itself. You were mentioning about that CFL loop thing that Irvin, they have him doing. He on that particular play, it wound up being a run to the other side. But that exact same look could result in the ball going to Irvin or the play going. I mean, they run multiple plays off of the same motions and the same looks. And this is true with, I think, their use of running backs. Last week, if you recall, Dillon got carries in the first half, a couple of carries. And so I imagine, Patricia is looking, well, hey, we got to prepare for this guy. They'll be doing this. Well, no, they played it entirely different this week than they did the week before. And so Dillon didn't get his carries until really kind of garbage time. You don't know what they're going to do, when they're going to do it, and who they're going to do it with. Mm-hmm. And that's a real credit to Matt LaFleur. I mean, there's just a hell of a lot to like right now, not just about the way they're playing, but the way they're approaching the way they're playing is really impressive to me.
You know, Matt LaFleur, to me, isn't a coach for the ages or anything yet, but his coach record right now in the regular season is
15-3.
Yeah.
And he's 8-0 within the division.
Yeah, you know? It's
there's
remarkable.
A lot to like right now. I mean, we could, 6 weeks from now, we could be, singing a different tune. And we probably will.
Yeah. I got the hashtag, fire Matt LaFleur ready to go.
You got to keep that queued up. Yeah.
And then the last player I wanted to mention, there was a Josh Jackson sighting.
Yay! He returned a punt.
That, and he, well, I was thinking more, he defended a kind of a fourth down bomb down the sideline, which looked very, he played it perfect.
He played like he did at Iowa against Wisconsin. You know, he was showing what he can do, and we just haven't seen much of that.
Just imagine if Josh Jackson has figured it out and is an adequate to above average corner. Those are things that as the season develops, if we get some of those pleasant surprises, that this team has a high upside. But, we're in the glow of a 2-0 record and 2 blowout victories. Everyone looks good right now. And even Josh Jackson looks good. So, I love to see it. And maybe it's something to be hopeful for.
Well, our whole tenor could be different a week from now. Because the Packers are going to, have to go down and play in the dome. The dome going to be empty, but it's still going to be, in the dome on the road against Breeze, who's, maybe not what he was even a couple of seasons ago, but still he's Drew Breeze. That's cause for concern. They got Alvin Kamara, who's an excellent running back. And of course the Packers don't defend the run that well. I mean, there's a lot of danger here, and the whole way we feel about this, could be very different in just a few days.
Well, they're only going to win is if the offense scores consistently. Sounds obvious, but we're not going to win a defensive battle against the Saints. It's going to be, we got to get up early, maybe get a couple of lucky plays on defense. We're up by 10-14. And then now it's all about our backs and our putting rush on Breeze. Now Breeze, I watched a little bit at the very end of the Raiders game. And that guy can throw the 6-yard pass. And maybe it was because the Raiders were playing. But, when he drops back, unless he gets the ball batted because he's short, all those 6 to 7, 8 yard passes are caught. Every single one. I mean, if you do the math and you get 3 chances at 6 to 8 yards, you march right down the field.
Exactly.
So I don't know how – I worry that the defense is not going to do well against the Saints. I think we're going to have to win 55 to 53 or something like that. I think it's going to be some crazy score, and that's the only chance we have. Unless it's there's some fumble, a freak tip, you know, the Packers get up 2 scores, and then we can start to be that one-dimensional defense, then I think we got a chance of beating them maybe comfortably. It doesn't look like Michael Thomas is going to play. Right. I'm way ahead of myself because that's podcast number 2. Any final thoughts that you have of this game?
There's just one, and it was is on Twitter. You had retweeted it. I don't know who it was that came up with the magnificent line that since the Packers drafted Jordan Love in the first round, they've scored, you know, 41 points a game. You know, so
yeah,
I thought that was genius.
Yeah, that is. And there's a lot of, like, you know, no matter how many good the Packers are, they're going to say, how much better would they have been if they would have drafted wide receiver? I actually still think that's true. MVS being
Dave
is very involved. So my final thoughts, as I thought, I think the game was closer than the score. I think dominating is they did in the second half. But I think it was kind of a closer game, you know, in the first half. MVS scares me. And I think we're going to have to count on this guy, especially if Devontae Adams is dinged up. And he is going to be a coach killer player this year. Next year, maybe not. And maybe I think he's going to be a drop or two on third down. Like if this Saints game is like 7-0, 7-7, 14-14, 13, it's just wet. And then we get to the fourth quarter. We got a score, and MVS just drops a first down gimme, and we're punting, and then we lose. And that's coming, Chris. And if we had a better player there, maybe we could make him more of the wild card that we don't depend on. If I know he's the third, and maybe certainly maybe fourth or fifth, we include the running backs, some tight ends, but he's involved and he scares me.
Well, I understand why. And I, you know, I'm hoping that his hands will improve with just, you know, more time on the field, in the office, in the offense. I am going to the office tomorrow, by the way. But anyway,
are you? Wow.
Yeah, I've got to, and I'll for reasons I'll explain later on. But anyway, I think that MVS is going to be better. I mean, by that I mean more consistent catching the ball. I don't know that he's ever going to be, you know, sticky fingered kind of guy. But I think he's going to be better. I think some of this is just working out what that role is, because primarily he's been a down the field guy, you know, sort of a Corey Bradford sort of thing. And now they're wanting him to, you know, run horizontally and, you know, catch those crossing patterns and be more of a comprehensive, complete wide receiver. And I don't think he's quite there yet. You know, he might be thinking about other stuff rather than just securing the ball because he's not 100% locked into the offense. That's just kind of my guess, and that's why I'm willing to give him a little bit more time. And while I am not sure drafting Love was the right call, I'm not bent out of shape that they didn't get a receiver there. I guess I would have preferred that they, you know, look at a linebacker or a offensive lineman there in the first round. But, you know, as it is, it's what's done, it's done. And again, you know, they have averaged over 40 points a game since they drafted Jordan Love. So
that's true.
It's probably the right move.
Well, good game. I'm excited about the offense. I think that as we'll talk about the next podcast here, I think this next game will really give us a lot of information what kind of team we have here. But, you know, we're 2-0 and two games I really enjoyed because I didn't stress out too badly on either one of them.
Well, we're going to wrap up the game podcast. We'll be back. I'm not sure exactly when Alan CD and our friends at Packers Stock are going to have the next podcast, which will include the betting lines, include pop culture. I think we have some mail to discuss as well. We'll have all that in the podcast that will be following this one. But this is going to be the conclusion of the game podcast. Packers go to 2-0. They double up the Lions 42-21. Packers up next, the New Orleans Saints. They play down in the Superdome in New Orleans. It's a Sunday evening game, so we probably won't have the podcast on Monday for you, but we'll have it early on in the week next week. And until that time, I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.